Today's lesson, I want to take some time and look at some of the attributes of God. I had noted to make a lesson out of this passage and chose to do it this week. And then I realized, as I've done the study here in Romans 11, how much it parallels what we deal with in our Corinthian class on Wednesday nights. But also there's a parallel here to our lesson from last Sunday. And we'll see that as we get into it. Oh, and I got to thinking, I always forget stuff, but Josh has started working at night, so I'm sure Josh didn't make it this morning because he probably was up late and was tired. So we remember him in our prayers as he does work there, and that is why he will miss some here on Sunday mornings. So remember him. So the goodness and severity of God. The passage here in particular, verse 22, behold, in Romans 11, verse 22, behold then, the New American Standard says, the kindness and severity of God. On those who fail severity, but to you, the Gentiles, God's kindness, if you continue in his kindness, otherwise you will be cut off. In this passage here is two attributes of God, and they're two contrasting attributes. They're two on two extreme parts of the scale, I would call it. We have those under the care of God who are beneficiary of God's goodness. And then we have a group of people who are subject to the severity of God. And so I want to take a look at these attributes in the bigger picture. The great lesson I want to draw from this is knowing the God we serve. Knowing and understand who it is that we call our Father, that is our Father, and what his attributes are, because our perspective of God affects our life here. Our perspective of God affects our life here, and we don't want to teach the wrong God. And if we teach any one of these to the absence of the other, we're not teaching the true God. We're not teaching the true God. And so I want to look at this as we study this lesson this morning from Romans chapter 11. And so just for an outline's sake, we have an outline here. God has, one of the points in this chapter 11, God has not totally rejected Israel. Paul says, I'm saved. I'm an Israelite. So the whole nation has not been discarded, right? So, and then in verse 11 to 16, Paul makes the point that, look, Israel's fall led to salvation. They killed the Messiah. Well, that allows us all to be saved. So there was a benefit to their fall, allows us all to be saved. And then he makes the point here in verses 17 through 24, we are all grafted in. And this is an analogy. I don't think today any of us know how to graft anymore. And when we lived in Idaho, we lived in a town called Groveland. When I say town, this was a town of a few hundred people. Groveland, it was Groves. And the city next to us, Blackfoot, which was 20,000 people or so, was Grove City in the day. The idea was there were apple orchards everywhere. And one of the things we do today, or people who produce trees, fruit trees in particular, they will take a good-bearing tree and graft it into something that's got a good root system. Because the best fruit trees don't necessarily have the best root system and the best genetics. And so literally, you can take a twig, basically, off of a tree that produces the fruit you want, and you take this other tree that's got a good root system, and you can graft it in there, splice it in there, and it'll grow. And you get the best of both. And that's what Jesus is referring to. Even in that day, they grafted trees. And they understood that technology. And so we're going to spend time talking about and looking at this idea associated with being grafted. And the idea of verse 17 through 21, let's read that together now. So Romans 11, 17 through 21. If some of the branches were broken off, this is about the Jews, right? Some of the Jews were cut. Remember, we're grafting. We're being cut off, and we're being grafted in here, right? So if some of the branches were cut off, And you, a wild olive, were grafted in among them and became a partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree. And I'm reading from the New American Standard. Don't be arrogant or conceited towards the branches. But if you are arrogant, remember that it is not you who supports the root, but the root supports you. Will you say then the branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in? Quite right. They were broken off because of their unbelief. But you stand by your faith. Do not be conceited, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he will not spare you either. So the natural branches here being the Jews. And some of them were cut off. And actually, in reality, in this analogy, everybody has to be grafted into the root system of Jesus. The Jews had this idea, I'm saved because I'm a child of Abraham. I'm already God's people. They missed it. Right? They missed it. They're not. They have to be grafted in. And so the wild olive, being the Gentiles, are grafted in with the Jews into this tree. And they're all sustained through the root. That, a grafted stem cannot survive of its own and independently. It has to be sustained through the root. And so he warns them, don't boast against the other branches. That was our lesson from last week, right? The Pharisee boasting against this publican. The Pharisee boasted about how his great works were. I'm so glad he's not like this publican, this tax collector. He's so glad about that. And you know, I guess it's one of the problems with humanity. It shows up here in the Roman letter of the Romans. Don't boast against the other branches. Don't be high and mighty about yourself. You have nothing to boast of. You have no superiority, right? And then he instructs that they should be steadfast in the faith. So I think we see there the tie into last week's lesson and this analogy being grafted in, how we are all grafted, and the necessity of being grafted, right? And so continue to think about this. And now here's the main theme of my lesson is about God's goodness and severity. The goodness of God is his mercy of God admitting you into his favor. That was his mercy. Part of it anyways, that they were allowed to be part of this tree. They were allowed to now grow and develop and produce fruit. And so they were brought in. They were not natural. They were not even a part of the tree to begin with. They have now been grafted in. And then the severity. And the King James uses the words, I think everybody, all the versions actually still use the word severity. The idea of severity is being cut off. So it fits the grafting analogy perfectly. Although it is a different word than the previous one. But the idea is of being cut off. There, God grafts in, his goodness grafts those in, and severity, he cuts them off. And so he cut off, or he broke off branches, that being the Jews, who presume to be children of God, are not. And they are separated from God in this case. And so that idea there. So what do we draw from this? What do we draw from this? First of all, the proper attitude towards the lost. It's not overly complex lesson. It's really parallel, like I said, last week's lesson. The idea being that we are should have the right attitude. And Paul warns them, don't be boasting against the other branches. You have nothing to boast of. Without the roots, you're dead. Right? You're a part of this tree now, but you only live because of the roots. So don't boast. You have nothing to boast of. And that's the same thing as the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Right? That's the same story there. Don't boast it. Because there is nobody that we should look down on. There's nobody we should belittle or demean or condescend to. We should not do that to anybody. And yet we see the Romans are even warned about this. The Roman Gentiles are warned about this. As Jesus even warned about the early disciples. No doubt it's a common theme, a common problem among all mankind that we want to look down on others. We have nothing to boast of, right? We have nothing to boast of. God's severity. Yes, this is an attribute of God. Sometimes it's hard to talk about. But it seems like it's the one we talk about a lot, right? The Israel family did not save them. In other words, because you were born to somebody didn't make you a child of God. It's not by natural selection. It's not through our birth. You had to be grafted in. You had to be grafted in. And so he says, take heed how you walk. take heed, be careful. Realize that you can fall away from faith as well. You have to sustain, right? And so the severity of God is that they could be cut off. And Paul warns them about being cut off, as a lot of the Israelites were already cut off because they would not believe in Jesus being the Messiah, that Jesus saved them. As we talked about in Bible class, Jesus the man, Jesus of Nazareth from Galilee, he is the Messiah. And the Jews struggled with that. The Jews struggled with that. And so a lot of them were not grafted into this tree. A lot of them were cut off of this tree and separated from this tree and from these roots. Right? So God's severity is real. God's severity is real. But so is his goodness. So is God's goodness. Benevolence towards those who are under the umbrella of his care. God's goodness is real, just as real as his severity. And that is something we should realize, that he is benevolent towards those who are his. In this analogy he uses, is that the roots deliver food up, allows the branch to live and to thrive, and allows the branch to produce more fruit, to carry it further. He don't actually talk about fruit there. He does other places. In our New Testaments, we'll find the idea of producing fruit being a part of being attached to the root. The root allows that to happen. But God's goodness, his benevolence towards us who are his. He is benevolent towards us, his children. And this gets down to this idea of the two sides of God, or two attributes of God that are opposite ends, right? Romans 2, we won't read this, but the same book, verses 1 through 11. In verse 4, he talks about his goodness, forbearance, and long-suffering. Those are attributes of God. And so is tribulation and anguish. That's also a part of God. And we got to preach both of them. We shouldn't preach one and avoid the other. I can say it for my own sake, that, you know, a lot of times I can overlook God's goodness and only focus upon the severity of God, also focus on the tribulation, the anguish. You know, we can talk about hell all day long and how we're all miserable and dying in sin, or potential for dying in sin, and how God's going to judge and bring this condemnation down, but that's not the only attribute of God. There is a God. Our God is a God of goodness. Our God is a God of forbearance and long-suffering. Romans 2 brings that out. And then we've talked about this on Wednesday night. We're not going to go here either. Talked about how many were lost in the wilderness. But just as a lot of Jews fell in the wilderness because of disobedience, what about the rest of them? They were blessed of God. They inherited the land. They were blessed of God. And that's not that great of an example, but it does show two sides of God. It shows that there were those who punished. There also were those who were blessed, who received God's goodness, who received forbearance, who received long-suffering. And I want to take us now, because this example, in my mind, is where we, I'm going to preach this, where we can't rationalize what happened to Lot. Okay? I have heard, and even recently, lessons about Lot and how Lot's wife messed up. She turned into a pillar of salt. And that's absolutely true. And the person that preached that very thing and went to Romans 11:20. That's why I'm preaching this morning. Went to 11:22 and said, look, the severity of God. Never once mentioned God's goodness. Story of Lot also shows the goodness of God. It is the goodness of God. I will say we can't calculate. I want to challenge you to think about this, that the God who helped Lot turn his wife into a stone, did he? So let's turn over to Genesis 19. We're going to spend the rest of our lesson right here in Genesis 19, because we can't rationalize and we cannot calculate, if you will, what happened to Lot. The punishment of Lot's wife is obvious to us and it's easy. Lot was no saint. Look at Genesis 19. Starting here in verse, let's look at verse, first of all, I want to read verse 15 through 22 first. 15 through verse 22 of Genesis 19. The morning dawned, remember, because Sodom and Gomorrah is fixed to be demolished, annihilated. The seas of the plain, God is fixed to rain fire and brimstone down. Abraham negotiates with God, please don't do this, God. If you can find righteous people, will you forbear, you'll destroy these cities. Remember that? Abraham negotiated with God, right? So here's Lot. He's in the cities of the plain. He's living there amongst them. And when the morning dawned, in verse 15, the angel urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city. Verse 16, but he hesitated. So the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out and put him outside the city. And when they brought them outside, one said, escape for your life. Don't look back and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you'll be swept away. But Lot said, oh no, my lords. Behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You have magnified your loving kindness which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape from the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me and I will die. Behold, here's this town near enough to flee to, and it's small. Please let me escape here. Is it not small? That my life might be saved. And he said unto him, behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the town was called Zoar. What has Lot done here? Was he not given a very specific command? You got to go. How do you respond? Right away, Lord. He's given two specific commands. One, to get out of town. And two, where to go. Does he obey either one of those commands? But wait a minute. Miriam was turned into a pillar of salt. How do you reconcile that? We can we? Notice what is said here of Lot in verse 16. He hesitated. Again, I'm reading from the New American Standard. The men or the angels here, they seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hand of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they took him out and put him outside the city. And then again, about where he should go, he's like, oh, I can't do that. They just told you to do it, Lot. Right? Do this, Lot. Lot says, I can't. What about this other town over here, Zoar? How about I go? They're small. Notice verse 21. I'll grant you that request, not to overthrow that town that you spoke of. That was one of them a target. Zoar was targeted for destruction. But Lot says, I want to go there. And they said, okay. But it's supposed to be destroyed. Lot, you can go there and we'll not destroy it. God made a way for Lot. But he didn't his wife. I mean, all she did was look back, right? All Lot's wife did was look back. Why did God deal differently? Now, I'll make this statement. I don't know that I can say that because I'm not God. I don't know why specifically he made that. But I think, let's turn to 2 Peter. And 2 Peter gives a commentary on this. And again, I challenge you to consider who the God we serve and where we stand with God. If we stand in Lot's shoes, are we beneficiary of his blessing, of his mercy, and of his loving kindness, of his all those attributes that we've talked about of God, His goodness. Notice 2 Peter 2. This is Peter, God's commentary on what happened a lot and why it happened a lot. Why it happened a lot. 2 Peter 2, verse 4 through 9. For God didn't spare the angels when they sinned, but cast them down to hell. So basically he's talking about how God is able to save. God did not spare the angels when they sinned, but they cast them into hell. So his judgment came. And verse 5, he didn't spare the ancient world, but he preserved Noah with seven others. In verse 6, now notice the parallel to what we just read. He condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter. And he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of the unprincipled men. Again, this is New American Standard. For by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. Then the Lord, this is our God that we serve, the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation or from trials, and to preserve the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. You see what Peter says about our God? He knows how to rescue the godly from trials or from temptation. How did he rescue Lot? He got him out of the city, even though Lot wasn't ready to go. He gave Lot another town, or accommodated Lot. God knows how to rescue the righteous. Was Lot without fault? Well, we can cast stones at Lot, can't we? Because he didn't do what God said. Remember the rest of the story. We didn't go there. What Lot's daughters did. Moab and Ammon were children. Basically, Lot's incestuous children. Lot found favor with God. Why I want to preach this today is because we preach fear of God, that we are the terror of God, but we can't talk about God's goodness. And we can't calculate why Lot was preserved, but we sure understand why Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt. She disobeyed. But it was deeper than that, wasn't it? There are those, and we can exist under the care of God. And God's mercy and God's compassion, His long-suffering, Lot was a recipient of that. Lot was a recipient of that. And it doesn't fit our narrative, this black and white picture that we paint of God, right? It just doesn't fit. How about Jonah? Remember Jonah, as we talked about the prophet and how God was benevolent towards him? I mean, after all, instead of going preaching to Nineveh, he wanted to jump off the ship and drown in the water. God didn't let that happen. Not only that, he goes and God makes this gourd grow and gives him shade as he sulks, waiting for Sodom and Gomorrah waiting for Nineveh to suffer the same fate as Sodom and Gomorrah. But it doesn't happen. I don't think we're told how Jonah ended his life. But we are given this commentary in 2 Peter. Lot was righteous. It wasn't that he was out without mistakes. It wasn't that he didn't have troubles and trials. But he was a righteous man, and his focus was towards God. And we can look at other characters in the Bible, but none to me are so plain and black and white about showing how God's mercy can be displayed to those, even though they don't fit in the narrative that we might call righteous. God saw it so. So I wanted to leave that lesson with you today. That we understand the God. That we don't just get stuck on the one God of the hellfire and brimstone. Because if we stop there, we've not told the story of God. As Christians, we can be recipients of God's benevolence. We are not in a place like Lot's wife was, who was struck down. The man who picked up sticks on the Sabbath day, he was struck down. Why? Well, I'm not God. I can't tell you everything behind that, but Lot was righteous. He wasn't perfect. We can look and say that he shouldn't have done that. She should have got out of the city when he's commanded, but he didn't. God was still merciful towards him. God was still merciful. So, preaching the message of the gospel, preaching the message of who our God is. He is full of goodness towards those that are his. And he does sever and cut off those who rebel against him. And the ground in between, that's his ground. He knows where it stands. He knows where we stand. And we just have to leave that with him. We have to leave it in his hands. We have to have trust and faith in him. Remember, as we preach, if we get caught up in preaching this only preaching about the God that provokes fear and inaction, our book of Revelation, John gives us insight to that as he spoke in Revelation 20. He talks about those who are not recipients of the grace of God, and one of those, the part that is not recipient, are those who are fearful, or those who are timid. And if we preach this God of only judgment and justice and torment, yeah, that's going to lead us not to inaction. That's going to leave us intimidated and timid. That's not the God that we're told about. There's not the God that we serve. Yeah, that's part of him, but that's not the whole story. Are you a recipient of God's blessings? Are you living within the bounds of his grace and his mercy? The first step in that process is to be baptized. Have your sins washed away. We would be glad to help you if you would like to do that this morning, become a disciple of Jesus. If you have already and you need the prayers of the saints, we offer you an invitation to let us know that as well. We can help you in any way. Won't you come while we stand and while we sing?